Welcome, listeners, miscellaneous other life forms. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time again, episode 38. And our locality has changed somewhat. Various people moving in certain directions. So we find ourselves, there's the three of us. We've got Pete and we've got Luke today. My name's Ben, of course. We're all parked next to each other in some car park in the middle of somewhere. And we've got cables going through the windows. But it's actually, we've got a studio recording environment. Actually, Pete, you could bring your 7B and just sit it on your lap or something.
Yes, yes.
The mobile triple car recording studio solution.
I was contemplating of hanging a mic off my rear view mirror or something like that.
Get like one of those windscreen suction cup adapter things, but get the right mic thread on it.
No, you can get those.
I was joking.
No, I think I've got something like that. I've certainly got these clamps that I've used for a miking exercise some time ago, and I would imagine you could mostly attach it somewhere on the interior of the car.
Well, next time you're going to have to do that, or I don't know, but it'd be hilarious when you get a picture of it. But yeah, so we can hear each other through the magic of audio going through cables, and it's quite a laugh. But great to have everybody back for another week. How's everybody been? I'm going to quickly, selfishly, fire away with my weekly update first, if that's all right with you guys. I have moved, so my commute has changed, and I thought, ooh, you know, I don't do any other exercise. I should probably... I wonder if I can cycle to work. So I got All Trails, an app that has worked very well, and I plotted a route, which actually just ended up following a little bit of one large river and then just another little one. The app says it's 28.5 kilometres, and I think I must have done up to 25 one way today and then went back again. So my legs and my posterior are suffering right now. But it was great. It was all canals and old railway bridges and locks and narrow boats and people fishing. And it was amazing, though.
Is that people fishing or people fishing?
It was people, and they were fishing.
Aye.
Yeah, I didn't go fishing for people. I was I was all on my own. But no, a good laugh, but I have a road bike, so very skinny tyres, and there were certain dicey sections where it got sandy and lumpy. It wasn't an adequate tool for the job.
So you're actually going to do it in anger?
I think I will. I think I need a better bike first, something with bigger, squishy, knobbly tyres, but then I'll give it a go. Because it's only 3 days a week, and that's a maximum of 3 days a week if the weather cooperates. That'll be a decent amount of exercise, and I don't have to cycle, so I can get in the car if it's pissing it down. I don't want to do it. But yeah, so that's been fun, and I imagine I'll still be feeling the effects well into next week. But, you know, whatever. It should be good. Should be good exercise. What have you guys been up to? Pete, how have you been?
Not too bad. I've been sort of deep in the wave state.
Oh, yes, of course. Actually, sorry to interrupt you, Pete. I did want to give a quick shout-out to a customer, Anthony, and an old colleague of ours, Jonty, who I know are listening to us. So thank you for your support, and hopefully we see you soon. Anthony actually bought a wave state from us last week, so he's got some digging in to do as well. Enjoy.
Yeah, I noticed that we've got one on display now.
So. Yes, we do. Colleague James had the unfortunate time of trying to blag a demo to a customer because I had no idea either. But how have you been getting on with yours?
Yes, quite well. It is really deep. There's a lot. There's certainly a lot to it. And I must say, there was one thing on it that I didn't realise it had. And yeah. It's sort of transformative. It's all good. It actually enhanced it in my mind, and I already thought it was a great piece of kit. It's got a dice button.
Ah, controlled randomness, I assume.
Yes, and if you think about the amount of combinations that can be achieved from it, because you have the all the variants that can be done, which are almost limitless. And I don't know if you've had that when you get a new instrument that's got presets and you sort of get it out for the first time, get it powered on, and you go through the presets and you go, oh, that one's good, that one's better, that's not so good. And then you come across a few gems and go, oh, I can use that, I can use that. But then eventually you've gone through all the presets, you've summed up what it is. you've either got to sit there and program it, which is all well and good, but this one you can just keep hitting this dice button and summon presets out of the ether.
Oh, so what extent does it randomise the
everything.
Thing? Everything.
It can, well, you can actually rationalise what its preset is. So it's you've got the, I can't remember, is it parts the four different sort of voices, if you want to, or
lanes of the stuff.
Yes, there's sort of four...
Tracks.
I'm not using the right terminology. So you can either do the whole lot, which is the master, or you can do the individual. Okay. So if you've got something you quite like, but you want to throw some randomness, or you want to just... You're searching for something else just to give it that extra something. You can just randomise that, and it will randomise all the elements. Or you can just randomise the master, so it just scrambles everything. And if you just don't like it, you just keep hitting the...
So that's pretty good, yeah.
The process, you hit the dice button, and then it talks about, do you want to do it? And then you hit enter, and then it just goes and does it. And you just keep doing that and go, that's great. So the next stage I need to figure out is how to... Because there's also a piece of library software which I've downloaded and installed, which doesn't do much other than give you access to the internal library and allow you to move stuff on and off it. Mm. And I would imagine there's most probably some method of going back to the factory preset, some sort of factory reset sort of process. So I want to make sure I'm acquainted with that before I start saving over the top of the presets.
Yeah,
nice. You see what I'm saying? So, yes, so that would be my next stage. So that's what I'll be...
I suppose it's good with that. You don't have to dig in right away. You can still get quite a lot of variety out of it without understanding
the whole thing.
What I find
with that type of thing is, because you know what it's like, you can work with stuff and you maybe get caught in your sort of the mindset of doing the same thing. We've talked about this a lot in a lot of scenarios.
I'm a sucker for that, yeah.
Yeah, you keep reinventing the wheel, so to speak. But with this, it's pure serendipity. You could just keep... You know, because you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love that sort of thing. It's a bit like going back to those the stochastic rhythm generators.
Yeah, of course. And, well, if you do battery power it, as you teased,
yes,
then you'll have no choice but to bring it to our next ModCaf on the spot.
Yeah, so hopefully, because it looks like autumn has arrived suddenly in August.
Yeah, thankfully, I was dying. It was way too hot.
Well, yeah, we always get it's always the, you know, one extreme to the other. It's either too hot and sweaty, or it's sort of like it is now, sort of
just grey and windy.
Raining.
Yeah, we were driving here. It absolutely tipped it down, the kind of thing that will just soak you to the skin in moments, for all of 3 seconds and then just went. It was really odd. Quite a strange one. A weird silence. It's Luke's turn.
Hello.
What have you been up to this week?
Well, a fair few things. I'll keep it brief, though, because I don't think everybody wants to hear about the minutiae of decluttering my various cupboards.
I do, but I don't think we'll have it on this podcast.
Indeed.
I love a bit of decluttering.
Yes, that's taken up the majority of my time. But I've also started a new job, which first day was today. So I've spent a good deal of amount of time sort of worrying and researching and fretting about that, because I'm sort of doing the same job I've been doing when I worked with you guys, but in a different industry for a different company. So that's taken up a fair amount of my time. But first day was today. It was pretty good. It was basically, I've never worked from home before.
Yeah, and also first day on the job from home.
Yeah.
Quite strange.
It was not what I was expecting at all, but also I quite enjoyed it. I basically spent the whole day on the phone to one of the guys, one of the more senior customer service people, sort of learning how they do things there. I enjoyed it for the most part.
Nice.
Other than that, I've been really stuck into doing a lot of deliveries on a new game called Death Stranding, which I've finally got to PC.
Is that the one where the main character is... he just is like an actor whose name I can never remember. One of the ones from The Walking Dead?
Yes.
Yeah, that is. I'm Norman thinking Reedus. The right thing. Looks really weird, but pretty interesting. Tell us about it.
It's a really weird game. It's by a producer called Hideo Kojima, who previously worked on Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill. Those franchises have obviously done him pretty well. They set up their own company called Kojima Productions to produce this game, and it's really, really good, really detailed. It's one of those games where the graphics are essentially movie quality. A huge amount of really good music in there, in terms of original score and synthesizer. They sort of follow a band called Low Roar, who do the majority of the songs for the band. I think they might have written an album for the song for the game, and I really quite like it. I've been enjoying that. Weirdly enough, the aesthetic we have going on today kind of reminds me of the game with these sort of black strands going between our cars. There's a huge amount of kind of an artistic license taken with cabling and creepy umbilical cords and stuff in the game that sort of matches the terrifying music.
So what's the premise? I saw a little bit of gameplay and somebody said it was a bit of a walk somewhere, drop off a thing type simulator, but then there was something weird with rain.
Yes, so rain doesn't work like rain anymore. It's now called Timefall, and anything the rain strikes is aged rapidly. The major premise of the game is that some sort of apocalypse has happened called the Death Stranding, and it's now the job of this porter, Sam, who's played by Norman Reedus, to go around the blasted ruins of America, reconnecting up cities using some sort of super internet called the Chiral Network. And it's heavily... I haven't finished the game yet, and I don't want to provide any spoilers to anybody that hasn't played it, because it's really good. It's heavily implied that this Chiral Network, this super internet, is involved in time travel or interdimensional space and has ruined everything. And essentially, it's, you know, the plot of the game, restoring the network, you're onto a bit of a loser. But we shall see. I haven't finished it yet. I'm on about chapter 9 of 14.
So pretty story heavy.
Yeah, very much awesome. So. If you've played a Kojima game, it's incredibly cinematic heavy as well, which is quite nice. The walking simulator side of it obviously is the bulk of the game, which I think will upset some people, but it's really well done. It's not just a case of pressing forward and going and, you know, the character does all the heavy lifting. You've got to balance Sam. You've got to make sure he doesn't fall over. When he does, you've got to press buttons to make sure he puts his hand out. You've got to keep lots of little things. And again, I don't want to go into spoilers, but you've got to keep lots of little things balanced. Otherwise, he's going to have a hard time walking up hills and stuff. He's got to drink water and Monster Energy to get up big hills and so on.
Sponsored by Monster Energy.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a very, very blatant brand endorsement. There's cans all over the place in the game. But, you know, why not?
It's kind of fun.
Other than that, I've just been digging into my SPDSX, which I've finally got out of the studio. It's been spending most of lockdown sat in the studio, not really doing much. I had a good jam with that, messing up with some samples that I've just putting on there to have a fiddle and play some drums along to some backing, because I haven't played with a musician in so long.
Amazing. Have you been sticking into your cocktail kit?
Yes. Yeah, basically. Yeah, so I've got the little SPDSX set up next to the cocktail kit. I'll send a picture through to the group chat.
Yes, please.
And you can kind of see what I've been doing. I've just got it set up on the right-hand side of the kit, so I've got the speakers sort of my desk set up with the SPD plugged in, so I can kind of play along to a backing track, basically, and then cue it as I go, which is really fun. And I'm going to be hopefully using that to get on some more writing as we do.
Excellent. Thank you very much, gentlemen. It's time to move into our first topic of the day. So, you found this one, Pete. What have we got? Mod Devices Mod Duo X.
Yes, it's not brand new as such, but it is now available on the open. Because I think previously it was a sort of GoFundMe or one of these... type of things.
Displays are making me think a lot of Electron.
Yes, I mean, but it's a multi-purpose self-contained pedal, but the premise is that all the processing is on board, and then you load, there is up at the currently at the moment 400 free plugins that you can actually load into it, and there's a whole variety of plugins. So I get the impression with a lot of these type of devices, because they're essentially it's a computer, but it's a pedal, that you can load almost anything. So it can be an effects pedal or a series of effects pedals, or it can even sort of emulate modular, I believe. There's a whole variety.
Well, it says you can load in Max MSP stuff, which not something I've really dug into at all, but that says flexibility to me.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if this is the future. So it's called a Mod Duo X, which is described as a standalone software audio processor. They're currently doing another, and I can't remember if it's GoFundMe or Indiegogo, or, doing another fundraising for a sort of a mini version of it with less, obviously, less functionality. So this is their sort of the big... the beefiest product in the range, and I was unaware of it, and it just sort of came to my attention. I think it was an advert that preceded a YouTube video that I was watching, and I don't normally do. I normally sort of end it as soon as possible to get onto the video, but I actually clicked through and went to the website and went, "Oh, what's this?"
It does look pretty cool. I mean, the question is always what kind of audio quality are you getting, but if it's anything like as open as it appears. It actually might be just down to how well kind of the stuff is coded, and it does seem like it's going to be very, very open source.
Yes, the only trouble, it's not cheap.
What's the damage?
Well, I believe it's in the ballpark of, in British pounds, it's in the ballpark of about 750.
Ooh, yeah, that is a chungus.
Yes, but I think it's the sort of the only pedal you need kind of thing. Yeah. That's what they're sort of. And if you think about, you know, let's take I was talking to a customer today, you take a Strymon, like a Big Sky, I mean, that's a fair chunk.
Yeah, well, they like 350, 400 quid, something like
400
that.
400 and. More like 450, I think.
Oh, wow.
And there was another pedal I looked at that was even more eye-watering. That was...
It could be there's that new drive with the motorized faders on it. That's pricey.
Yes. There's some seriously expensive effects pedals about. There's no doubt. And this is sort of almost the crowning glory. It's sort of got quite a bit of appeal. It's even got a headphone socket, I noticed. Oh, and yeah. It's got CV out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very flexible device. So I think they're trying to cover a lot of bases. So potentially for guitarists, keyboard players, or anybody else that's producing, or, you know, even vocalists. I mean, it's just, I think you could utilize it with just about anything.
For those of us that play drums, what's a CV out?
Ah, well, the modular world, back in dearly, when it was just that big telephone switchboard style thing, and that was a synthesizer, you got to communicate between modules. So CV stands for control voltage, and it is just that, a DC or AC voltage that goes to control things. So if it's something like an AC alternating current, you got your positive and your negative, that's generally how LFOs tend to be arranged. So you can have a nice, slow-moving modulation in voltage form on a wire. But having lots of modern gear with CVs involved just means it opens it up to the modular world, and everything being so flexible, you can really do whatever you want with it, especially with a device like this. Mm. You could send audio down it and use audio to modulate things, which is how you could potentially wire up a compressor from scratch if you've got amplifiers and enough modules like envelope followers and things. It's a nice inclusion because they appreciate that you might want some kind of openness, and if they're going for a device that's super flexible, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
To the people that like flexibility in their workflow, tend to be kind of modular type people. There's that drive pedal that I was speaking about. I'm really struggling to find what it was called. It's one of those ones like, you know, Chase Bliss, Empress Effect, one of those really high-end brands. But it's weird because it's a drive pedal, but they put motorized faders. I thought maybe it was going to be an emulation of some vintage reverb or something. But well,
there was also
excessive.
Before they departed or wherever they went or went to the wall, there was the T-Rex. That was a very expensive pedal, and also there was the modular version of it.
Oh, yeah, it literally looks like they've sort of sandwiched a little kind of cassette player. Is that the thing?
Yeah, it is a cassette, but I actually saw someone utilising one, and it's not... It is a cassette, but it's uniquely... It's not a, you know, your normal type of cassette. It's an Amobius in a loop tape in a cassette form, but it is very bespoke to them. So it was very much fabricated for. When you actually see the cassette, it's quite specialised. It's totally sealed, other than the wherever the heads can get in to read the tape and so forth.
Gotcha.
But it's very unique. I would imagine the replacement tapes weren't cheap.
Probably not.
And they're obviously going to wear.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking at some of the pricier pedals that we sell. There's a lot of them in the 400 to 500 range, a lot more than I thought.
Yeah,
Origin Effects.
Yes,
are a culprit.
Well, the Chase Bliss stuff that we talk about quite a lot—they're not cheap either.
I do like those.
This is all your very sort of well-built, hand-wired, unique sounds.
They'd better be.
Yeah, not for that money. Yes,
yeah. There are some which are pretty. Well, I don't want to say boring, but here is a drive pedal. I think it's a company called Vemuram or something. It's just a drive pedal, and it's like 300 and something quid. It's like not even like a multifunction one. It's just single drive circuit, three knobs and a button. It's like 300 and something pounds. It better sound the tits for that kind of money. Anyway, farewell, Mod Devices Mod Duo X. Hello, Luke Spacey Bit, that we need a jingle for and a proper title. What have you got for us in the world of the beyond, Luke?
This is a brief look at a recent proposal made by a group of scientists where they assume, or have essentially postulated, that an ancient supernova may have caused, or at least been involved in, a mass extinction on Earth in previous millennia.
How on earth do you go about figuring that out?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. So this is it's a little bit about what I wanted to cover, because I've got three different articles with me today that delve into sort of different degrees of depth and present the arguments in slightly different ways, shall we say. But I've got the Vice article I've got here, which is pretty good when you get into the body of it, but the title says, "An ancient supernova caused a mass extinction on Earth, comma, scientists believe." Which is okay, but we don't, when we read sort of deeper into it, scientists don't believe this is definitely true. It is one of those things where they have postulated this, and they have also essentially set a challenge to the wider industry and said, right, this is what probably happened. Go forth and find evidence.
Go forth and disprove me, because that's how science works.
Indeed, and then we might get a little bit closer to some sort of truth, but not really, but that's the whole point, and that's why we do it, and it's great. And
we also must learn!
Also painful, yes. Mm. So essentially, the bulk of it is that the Devonian extinction, which was roughly, 359 million years ago, so not too long.
not too long, a couple of days ago. It's fine, yeah. Around the corner. Cosmically speaking,
indeed. Well, yes. If you want to talk about the the grand scheme of things, not terribly long ago, certainly before human life. But essentially, what these researchers are proposing is that a supernova, the explosion of a dying star, may well have had an impact on life on Earth, and essentially might have contributed to the die out of lots and lots of species via several different means. The principal one, essentially, being irradiation, damage of cells. Heating up of the atmosphere.
Kind of stuff that we were talking about with sunspots last week, but on, obviously, enormous scale.
So this particular explosion that happened possibly 360 million years ago would have bathed the Earth in very high levels of that sort of thing, radiation particles that would have disrupted DNA, made things have a very bad time of it, yes, and then essentially heat up the atmosphere and ruin their day and their life and essentially bring about the extinction of several different things. The reason why I wanted to talk about it, though, is because, as interesting as that all is, I wanted to talk a little bit about how you can see various different kinds of journalism in various different sites. And I like Vice as a site. Generally speaking, they're a pretty good bastion of modern news, especially as far as the science goes. And it's always written in like a nice, digestible way that doesn't skirt around the facts, which is quite good. But nonetheless, the headline is slightly misleading. I then went on to space.com, which I frequently go to, being a massive space nerd, and had a look at...
Somebody definitely won that domain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, someone made a lot of money with that website. and their article leads with, "Did a supernova cause Earth's mass extinction 360 million years ago?" And which is a better question. I then also went on to PNAS, which is P-N-A-S.
Excellent, now, I am mature.
Behave. PNAS is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America. Essentially, PNAS is where you will find the original article, the actual proposal that the scientists have made, written by them. They are looking for evidence of this by testing sediments, fossil records from the Devonian period, and looking for evidence of certain radioactive isotopes that would have essentially come off of this star. So one way you can measure this stuff, and this is interesting and kind of quite scary when you think about it, is they talk about cosmic rays hitting Earth and landing. And what is a ray? Well, it's a particle fired extremely fast. It's not the sort of thing that's going to get stopped very easily by anything in the vacuum of space, and it smashes off of the Earth's atmosphere, lands on the ground, and we're hit by thousands of cosmic rays all the time, but certainly during a solar event of this magnitude, a supernova, lots and lots of them would have been striking the Earth a lot more in more densely packed areas than normal and would have caused some of this damage. So they're essentially looking to see if there's any evidence, or we'll soon see in you know, the years to come. This is a good story because essentially it's evidence of new science. It's exactly the sort of thing that is encouraging to see. It's not them retreading old ground. It's them saying, okay, look, we don't really know why everything died out around the late Devonian period. We don't really understand why there have been so many mass extinctions. Well, we have good answers for some of them, but particularly for this one. They want to try and figure out what could have made the Earth inhospitable to general life overnight and what could have caused so many species to be, to fall so ill so quickly, because there are certainly a lot of fossil records from this period, which is why we would think of it as a big die-off and extinction. So it's cool because this is going to inform a lot of study. It's going to be probably an area where people are going to go to university and say, okay, what are you studying? Well, my thesis is going to be on supernova triggers for the end of Devonian extinctions. I'm going to try and find out.
That's a title for a thesis if I've ever heard one.
Oh, they are so long usually, much longer than that. That's a very truncated one. They'll be very specific. The titles on actual scientific papers are incredibly specific. They're like a paragraph in themselves.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the ones that my dad's worked on, and I read them. It's like, okay, got that word. And that's basically all I get.
Yeah.
Well, do keep us posted. And I do have to ask, do you know Bill Wirtz?
Yes.
All I've got going through my head right now is the bit from his A Brief History of the World, and it's the Cambrian Explosion.
Yes.
Yeah, but
I happened to watch that yesterday, actually, while I was digging
this up. I
watch
it all the time. Lovely. Anyway, any more from the spacey world?
That's it for today.
Nice.
I do apologise. I had more planned, but unfortunately work and video games got in the way. but we do have, lots of things in the sort of space sphere going on. India's space programme is doing interesting things at the moment. They're looking at sending up more moon rovers. Obviously, SpaceX is continuing its work on the Starship production line. We've got things going on in the ISS where they're actually hunting for a leak right now, which is quite fun. So we'll cover some of these.
That doesn't sound fun to me, a leak in a space station.
Yeah, right. not something you wouldn't mind hearing about a leak in your own home, but I don't know, millions of miles above the surface of the Earth, I'm not so keen.
No. Scary.
They can't exactly just drop home and get a pipe, can they?
No.
Or a new panel or whatever it is that's leaking. Fortunately, it is a very slow leak, but maybe we'll cover that in more detail another time because it's quite a popular story. It's going around quite a lot at the moment.
Yeah, no worries. Well, we wish them well and hope that leak doesn't become anything worse, like an anti-flood. I don't know. Anyway, that means it's time for us to make our usual YouTube recommendation. So if you're bored off your noggin, you'll have a little bit of something to do with the wonderful world of the internet. I've got one right out of the gate because I prepared something for once. I subscribe to the Loam newsletter. Loam. It's L-O-M with a weird accent on the O. They are a company, I believe, from Scandinavia somewhere. Obviously didn't do quite enough research. But they make all sorts of interesting things pertaining to field recording, ambient-y, experimental noise, music-y type stuff. They have a bunch of really sensitive, really low-noise microphones, which are pretty cool. But what they also do is a couple of electromagnetic recording devices, including some really directional ones or ones that are more sensitive but not directional, so you can capture just the general field of whatever's going on where you are and obviously listen to it. All that's really fun. But they also have a product called the Geophone, which is a super sensitive contact mic, very much in the style of what scientists, geologists are going to be using to track seismic events and all this kind of stuff. So you can get a little spike, you can stick it in the ground, or it's got a magnet, so you can just plug it into, well, pop it onto something metal. And through them, I found a really cool YouTube channel who this was in the sort of the mail shot that they sent, saying, oh, check out these people using the Geophone doing some cool stuff. So, YouTube channel called Free to Use Sounds. They are a couple of people also from Scandinavia. I didn't check. But they just do some cool field recording stuff. They've got some tutorials. We've got a video here called Best Wind Protection for Field Recording. So, field recording stuff, but they've got some really good sound design-y type videos. Things like the Loam Prietsaw, which is one of those big field electromagnetic listening devices, and I watched their video on the Geophon. They went to Iceland, tried it on a bunch of stuff. It is super cool how it sounds. They had the first one they did, there was some abandoned kind of bomber type plane that crashed somewhere. It was just kind of the metal shell now, and it's in a what looks like a desert, but we're talking Scandinavia, so I think this was Iceland actually. So wasn't a hot desert, but it was just kind of sandy,
frozen
dusty
dessert.
Frozen dessert, the tasty kind. But yeah, the winds were kind of, you know, making some bits of it rattle, and the sound was incredible. So definitely recommend you watch that. But they've got some really cool content. They've done sort of a tour around Iceland doing a bunch of really fun recording type stuff. Definitely recommend it. Also definitely check out Loam Audio on Tinterwebs. Who's next?
Right, I've got one that I'm surprised I haven't mentioned it before. Now, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Royal Institute Christmas lectures that are regularly...
I'm not, don't judge me.
Okay, sorry. they're regularly on... there's normally three episodes around the Christmas period, and they're really good, but they're ostensibly for children. Mm. They're high quality. But the Royal Institute has lectures regularly. And they have a YouTube channel which features these lectures. And there is a plethora of them on there. And they're all leading scientists who are experts in their fields from all over the world. And they'll do a lecture that pertains to their particular subject matter expertise. And there's a lot of really good and really interesting stuff on there, and I would highly recommend it to anyone. So that's a pretty straightforward one.
Well, what kind of subject matter are we talking?
It's all science, lots of physics, and
anything popping out at you while you're scrolling through the feed?
Well, let me go through here we go. Issues we face at the nanoscale.
Okay.
That's the title of one. Mm. Let's have a look at the other one. This is obviously one for, I think they have also sneaked the Christmas ones in there. So
yeah.
This one's how helium changes our voices.
Oh, yeah.
So
more accessible ones too.
Yeah, an explanation there. But there's some really sort of top flight ones here. There's one about the Fermi paradox.
Oh, cool.
My, yes. That's
so it's sort of, and lots of interesting experiments because they've been doing these for hundreds of years, literally.
Nice.
And it's in the same building there where the Royal Institute was founded. And yes, they've been doing them for, you know, an extended period, let's say. Certainly from the sort of, at least from the early 1800s, possibly before.
Pretty cool. You always say you've got kind of a pretty serious subscription list.
Yes.
What kind of number are we talking?
Possibly 200.
Ooh, yeah, that is a chunk.
It's just, the trouble is I come across this stuff and I've been looking at YouTube for a long time and, you see this stuff and I just flag it, you know, that's, and there's pure gold on YouTube. It's just mining it, isn't it? I mean, here's one from one of your favourites that you recommended, Tom Scott.
Oh, yeah, I was watching some of his stuff earlier.
Yeah, and he's done a lecture. This was 10
was
months ago. Let's have a look. There's no algorithm for the truth.
Interesting. I might have to give that a look.
Yes, it's purely titled The Royal Institute, or Institution, sorry.
Excellent. Sounds good. Luke, who have you got for us?
So I've got David Bennett Piano, who essentially is a music theory teacher. Well, that's what his YouTube channel is dedicated to anyway. It's really good. Like you've probably said previously, Ben, I was listening to the podcast from last week on the way here. I feel similarly. My music theory isn't particularly up to scratch as it should be, considering how long I've been playing. but it's really good stuff, and I've been taking it upon myself to learn a little bit of piano recently. And this stuff is way above my pay grade as far as my piano practice goes. But it's really interesting to know for the future. A particular video I wanted to mention the one that sort of drew me to his channel was a video on the Picardy Third, and that mainly because it sort of drew a comparison between like early African American music, funk and soul, with the Beatles, with Radiohead. And I was like, well,
cool.
That's a diverse selection. I'm interested to know what's going on there. And it was really, really interesting. And he sort of went through all the theory behind how a minor can resolve to a major, why it feels the way it does, and what goes into achieving that, and how these different musicians have utilized it in very similar ways across, you know, across time, across different genres.
Across time!
Across
I love
time
it.
And space and music.
Music does transcend everything.
Indeed. As does the Picardy Third, apparently. So, yeah, I was really, really enjoyed his videos. They're explained really well. You can engage with the explanation at multiple levels. It's delivered in quite a nice, concise, informative way, even though the topic subject matters are quite, you know, involved and quite high-level music theory, some of them anyway. It's all explained quite rationally, and he has these really useful stave kind of like screens that he puts up where he'll literally move the stuff as he speaks, and the graphics of it are quite well done. So I'd thoroughly recommend David Bennett Piano if anybody wants a little bit of music theory stuff or just has some interesting, because he doesn't just do sort of, you know, techniques. He'll do sort of comparisons between artists through the ages in some similar manner to this video, but in different settings about how music's evolved and how you can compare certain things and what sets things apart in terms of complexity and what doesn't. I watched a really good topic on a really good video where the topic was how some Beatles songs worked, and another one on how polyrhythms and polymeters are different and what the two differences are. So it was a bit more informative, you know, a sort of a, less of a melody, pure melody kind of thing, more of a pure theory kind of thing, which was, you know, really interesting. I particularly enjoyed the polyrhythms and polymeters because it was explained in a very concise way that was so much better than the way it was explained to me when I first started getting into that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, can't recommend them enough, really.
Excellent. Well, if you're lacking in brain food, then you've definitely got a couple and then another one of stuff to dig your teeth into, especially if you're musically and scientifically minded. But if you just like weird sounds, then I've got one for you. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, this is a weekly doodad. Do please reach out to us on Facebook, Rack Addicts UK on Facebook. That's probably the easiest place to find us, engage with us. Thank you so much for listening. You take care of yourself this week. Farewell.